This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Bob Kinzel. In less than 10 weeks, voters in Iowa will caucus and take the first step of the Democratic presidential primary race. Currently, the four frontrunners include Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, former Vice President Joe Biden, and South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. But other leading candidates could still emerge in Iowa, New Hampshire, or other early primaries. One man who knows the primary process and the perils of Iowa all too well is former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, who was a Democratic candidate in the 2004 presidential race. Governor Dean spoke with VPR's Bob Kinzel about the 2020 Democratic primary candidates, and they started by reflecting on the fact that it was 16 years ago that Dean was in Iowa running his own campaign.
What is really awful is yesterday on Twitter there was a poll that showed December 3rd what it looked like in New Hampshire. I had 42, Kerry was second with 19, and everybody trailed up. So, you know, I just thought, oh my God, I'd forgotten I'd come that close.
Well, first of all, I think it's important for folks to know that you have not endorsed any candidate in the race at this time. Why is that?
I am putting together a outside the DNC, but very much related to all the activities on the Democratic side, a gigantic database, which the Republicans have had for a couple of cycles, and we have not. And we need one. They're much further ahead than we are. And it's going to be very different than theirs. But even though I don't work for the DNC, the function is a Democratic Party function in the sense that everybody should benefit from it. So I just don't think I was very much a stickler when I was running the DNC for not putting your thumb on the scale in the presidential race. And I still feel that way. And if I'm going to do something to benefit Democratic candidates, I think I have to benefit all of them and not be putting my finger on the scale.
So is this basically a comprehensive voter ID database?
Yes. It's actually an exchange of the data that already exists. And there was a decision by the FEC in 2016 that what we thought was illegal is not, because the Republicans did it and we sued them and the FEC decided it was okay. So what we're doing is we found a way to share data between the so-called hard side and the soft side, which they've been doing for a couple of cycles, and now we're going to do it. It's going to look very different than theirs because we don't happen to have $250 million worth of Koch brother money to plunk down, but it will get there.
And how does this database help the various candidates?
Because anybody can be a member as long as you're a Democrat, of course, or working on the Democratic side. And you'll have access to the data of all the other members without knowing which member is giving you the data. So we already have enough data, and we can get more. But it's all over the place. It's in 50 different state parties. It's in the DNC. It's in the labor unions. It's in the environmental groups. It's in Planned Parenthood and NARAL and so forth. So it's all over the place. And this is a way of exchanging that data.
Well, let's take a look at the Democratic race and get your thoughts about it. In the last week or so, two more candidates have jumped into this race, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. And it's thought that they're getting into this race because they both think the Democrats need to nominate a more moderate candidate to defeat President Trump. And they're concerned that Joe Biden is going to fade. Is that sort of the conventional wisdom? Do you agree with it?
No, I don't. I try not to speculate on this stuff. You know, I've seen this from every angle you can possibly imagine, including as a candidate. And it's pretty predictable at this point. We always get to a point where we start to winnow the field that more people want to come in because they don't think the field's good enough. Well, the voters think it's pretty good if you actually look at the real polling. So, you know, whatever Bloomberg and Deval's reasons are, I am skeptical of the idea that they can come in and save the party from itself. The voters usually do a pretty good job of that.
Do you have concerns that either Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren are too liberal to have the nomination and then defeat Trump?
I do not have those concerns. I'll tell you why. People really don't vote that much on issues. They vote on how do you connect with people. I had a guy who was fixing my car in my driveway 2-3 years ago when Trump was first running. And he's a real Vermonter. And, you know, we were trying to get the thing running. And I knew he was going to bring this up and talk about politics, and I didn't want to because I was pretty sure I knew who he was for. And he said, well, what do you think of Trump? And I said, well, you know, I didn't say much. And he goes, well, you know what I think, which I knew was the next one coming. He said, I think we ought to have a Trump-Sanders ticket. That would give the middle finger to all those people in Washington. So it's not ideology. It's what he liked about both those candidates was they were out there saying stuff that other people wouldn't say. And he, what he wanted was, you know, up yours to the Washington establishment. So people don't really vote on issues as much as you think they do. They vote on how attracted they are to you as a human being, I think.
So there are a lot of national pundits who are looking at the Democratic race and saying, well, it represents the liberal wing of the party against the more moderate wing of the party. You would say that's not true?
First of all, I would say that was hooey. Second of all, I think there is a generational struggle going on in the party. That's been going on for a while, and the younger generation is gradually taking over from the outside in. For example, in 2017, when we made huge gains in Virginia, most of those people were ran against the incumbent or party-nominated people, and the younger people won. And as a consequence, the Democratic Party looks much more like the country now. In Congress, the same thing happened. So the party is going younger. It's also going centrist. Nobody believes this because nobody wants it. It doesn't make a good story. But here's the truth. We elected 40 new representatives, seats we took away from the Republicans. And five were AOC and Ilhan Omar and so forth and so on. They get all the ink. You know, they're young, they're exciting, they're provocative. 35 of them were from places like Orange County, California, Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas. Our party is moving to the center. And I think the public is moving to the left. I think if they like Medicare for All, for example.
I want to talk to you about Medicare for All in just a second. Do you think it's important that the Democrats nominate a presidential candidate in 2020 that reflects these demographic changes?
Yes, I do. I think we have to connect with the people that are our core supporters. 70% of people under 35 vote for Democrats. They don't particularly like the Democratic Party because they don't like institutions in general. But they will vote with us because our values are their values. We want to do something about climate change. The Republicans don't. We want to do something about fairness. We value diversity. The Republicans don't. So our values are attracting 70% of voters under 35. Our core base, in addition to that, are women, particularly moderate suburban women, and people of color who overwhelmingly vote for us. So that's who we have to get out, and that's what the ticket's got to look like.
So you've got at least four candidates in the Democratic race who are in their 70s. Can those people reflect the demographic changes?
They may not reflect the demographic changes, but they could appeal to those younger voters. Bernie's already proved he can do that. Obviously, Pete is doing that, and so is Elizabeth. So, you know, your age doesn't matter as much as your connection to the young people.
You mentioned health care and Medicare for All. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are certainly supporting that approach. On the other side, you have some folks who are talking about Medicare for All who want it.
Right.
You're a doctor who once expressed some support for the Medicare for All approach that Sanders and Warren are backing. What are your thoughts about this approach now in 2019?
For doctors, Medicare for All is much better. Because Medicare, dealing with Medicare is a lot easier than dealing with insurance companies who are pretty much vultures, health insurance companies. Even the not-for-profit ones are, if not vultures, incredibly inefficient, and their rates are going up at 4, 5, 6 times the rate of inflation. It's a disgrace. However, from a political point of view, this is a very libertarian country, whether you're left or right. People do not want to be told what to do by the government, no matter what party they come from, especially the younger generation who doesn't really particularly trust the government because it's a big institution. So you're going to have to give people choices. You can aim for Medicare for All, but if somebody wants to keep their insurance, they're going to have to be allowed to do that. The truth is, most people won't want to keep their insurance at because Medicare is a much better deal for people than insurance companies. I think that has to be a gradual transition, and I think the people who want to make the transition should be the consumers and the voters, not politicians.
I wanted to go back to 2004 for just a moment here at the end. And if my memory is correct, in December of 2003, as you mentioned, you were the front runner. Then you got endorsed by former Vice President Al Gore. Was that the high water mark of your campaign?
Well, I guess. I mean, I could feel the momentum slipping away with 3 weeks to go in Iowa. The problem was I was not a disciplined candidate. And, you know, when you see a disciplined, really good candidate like Barack Obama, you realize that I was a pretty rough diamond. I'd say what I pleased. And that's endearing for a while. But at some point, you start to think about what that would be like in office. And, I mean, the reason I came in third in Iowa, and I was supposed to come in first, and I think it was because, first of all, Kerry had a great ground game that they put together, and second of all, people were looking for a more organized approach.
Former governor and former Democratic presidential candidate Howard Dean, many thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me on.